Tonight, kind of an odd topic, I'm going to talk about inclusion and exclusion in various ways. And the first thing I'll just not acknowledge is that I think most people who start pursuing personal growth and spiritual growth work feel themselves to be a bit like outsiders in the world, you know? And so, you know, a sangha like this is in some ways a place where outsiders gather. You know, we're following a current that is very different from, you might say, the prevalent conversations of our culture. Now, having said that, I was thinking about it and wondering, you know, it's so easy for individual groups to say we feel like outsiders, and it really makes me wonder if you polled everyone in the United States, what percentage of people would say they felt like insiders and what percentage would say they felt like outsiders? And I kind of suspect it might be more like 80 or 90% would feel like outsiders, you know? And it's, there's something intriguing about that. It's almost, you know, it raises the question, could we develop a larger sense of belonging out of kind of a shared sense of not belonging, you know, that sort of thing. As the poet said, when the brokenhearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer. And of course, one way to look at inclusion and exclusion is just the patterns in our own life. You know, it's very natural that there are some people in our life that we naturally include, and they're our in-group, our tribe, you know, and they're usually others who are, you know, there's some kind of warmth, but they're not as close. And then there are strangers, you know, we may not have much feeling for them. And then there are always those few people that we really want to exclude, you know, for what, and we have all kinds of stories around that, you know. And of course, the wisdom traditions are quite clear, univocal even, in their teachings on this. We have to love everybody, you know, the people close to us, the people that, you know, that horrible person that did X, Y, and Z to me, and I never want to talk to them again. Buddhism, for example, says I have to have universal compassion for everyone. And Christianity, in some ways, is even more explicit with its teaching, love your enemies. You know, that person that you most excluded, that's the person you most need to love. I'll read a passage. This is from the Gospel of Matthew. It's from a passage in the Bible called the Sermon on the Mount. It's Matthew's chapter 5-7. Traditionalists probably believe that Jesus went and he sat down on the mountain and he just, you know, spoke these three chapters of gems. Modern biblical scholars think it's much more like a greatest hits compilation, all these powerful statements that were put in one place. But if you've never read the Sermon on the Mount, it takes only about 15 minutes to read, and it really is a tremendous spiritual classic. So this is just a short part of it. Jesus said, "You have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you only love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same?" So this whole idea that, you know, we really don't get spiritual points for being nice to the people who are nice to us, you know. It's not, I mean, you know, if you're mean to the people that are nice to you, then you're a real jerk. But, you know, in other words, that's not really where the spiritual work is. The spiritual work is extending the love beyond our natural sense of inclusion.
Tax collectors love those who love them?
Yes.
They do, huh?
Yeah. And yeah, we won't go into, it was a very different system in ancient Rome, but we don't need to go into that. Another aspect of inclusion and exclusion has to do with boundaries. Boundaries are mediated by the third chakra, sometimes called the power center, because people who have very strong boundaries often are very powerful people. And I think it's very instructive. Some people have heard me talk about some aspects of this before. I think it's very instructive to understand boundaries, to think in terms of the physical organs here, the digestive organs. So digestion is the miraculous process by which not me becomes me. We eat other foods and my body turns those foods into me. And it's really quite an amazing, sophisticated system. I put all kinds of foods into my body and they go into my body and my body decides, here are things that I need. I'm going to take these in. These become part of Mike. And here are other things. We don't need this. And this is going to pass. All this happens, this process of getting absorbed to me happens in the small intestine. And it's actually fascinating. The small intestine is this narrow little tube that's wound around in us. And it has these microvilli in it for extra surface area. The total surface area of the small intestine is approximately the area of a tennis court. That's the area devoted to absorbing nutrients in our body. And it's natural that, of course, we absorb nutrients, but given, you know, it's just natural that we also wind up absorbing some toxins in that as well. And the body is prepared for that. The liver is very good at absorbing, recognizing the toxins and repackage them in a way so that the kidneys can get rid of them. So it's this complete system for really taking things in this incredibly intelligent and sophisticated way. So we think of the analogy with emotional energy. Emotional energy comes at all of us. You know, you should be this kind of person. You should be that kind of person. You should buy this. You'd be better if you were this way. You know, all the energy that comes through advertising, through peer pressure, through everything else. Boundaries are about the sense of, do I take that message in and let it become me? Or do I let that message pass? I'd say the analog in many ways of the monumental surface area of the small intestine, the analog of that in some ways is the human heart. The human heart is so prepared to receive love and so ready to receive love that often sometimes it receives things that are packaged as love that aren't really love. And in many ways, I think the analog of the liver in that analogy is the capacity for discernment. You know, because sometimes we take in things that aren't quite right for me or seem good at first, but then turn out not to be so good. And it's really having very clear discernment that, as it were, detoxifies us. And the tricky thing about discernment is, I mean, discernment sounds like a lovely thing, doesn't it? But the more discernment we have, the more completely honest I'm being with myself, then I have to give up a lot of illusions. Like, and any illusion I cherish has to go if I'm being really discerning, you know? But it's this tricky thing because ultimately having good boundaries depends on that, you know? And so it's like, you know, on the one hand, you know, I think we don't necessarily say this explicitly, but it's almost like we walk around saying, well, I don't want to be that honest with myself, but boy, I wish I had better boundaries, you know? And it's a funny, like, I want my cake and eat it too kind of paradox. You know, I think the real choice is much more, well, I can have the mediocre discernment and not be that honest with myself, but then I'll have the mediocre boundaries, and then the world will nail me sometimes because of that. Or I could have really good boundaries, but then I'll have to have really good discernment which means I'll have to be really honest with myself, you know? And so it's one of those conundrums. Oh, and Isabel's running out of power, so she needs to switch. That's fine. Do what you need to do. And so boundaries do present all kinds of paradoxes. And I'll just name, I think we live in a culture that doesn't understand boundaries, doesn't honor boundaries, where there's just lots of problems with interpersonal boundaries. I think that's just part of the culture that we have. I'd say the final part of inclusion and exclusion is what parts of our own psyche are included and excluded. What parts of me do I include or exclude? You know, you can think of these times that, you know, someone gets upset or gets flustered or something and then later says, oh, that was not me. You know, we other a part of ourselves that way. You know, I don't want to feel that. And so it gets othered. And there are some places in us that have actually been othered from before we ever had any say in the matter, you know, in early childhood, for whatever way that we were treated, whatever conditions were around. Some parts of us were given the message, this part of you doesn't belong. You know, and it's very tricky to work with these places. In meditation, of course, is one of the areas where over time one can make contact with these deep places. How to say? It's tricky because when one starts the work of self-love, there are always places that, as it were, you know, run right away towards self-love, and those are the places that are easy to welcome. There are always places that feel like they're doing their job by, as it were, resisting the light, you know. And so it takes incredible kindness to work with those places. Much in the same way as if I were relating to someone outside who were aggrieved in some way. And you had to be that much more conciliatory, assuring, you know, all the work of trust building, etc. I have to do this work sometimes with my own students. Making things safe so that over time they can open. And exactly the same way that we would have to appeal to an aggrieved outer party, we also have to relate to aggrieved inner parties that way. So I'll share the quote sheet now. First, I'll share it with the Zoomies. I'm a teacher, so I always have handouts. So I have the quote from the Gospel of Matthew, and below that a quote from Lao Tzu. In much the same way, the sage is good at saving people, and therefore nobody is abandoned. Always good at saving things, therefore nothing is wasted. This is called following the guidance of the inner light. Hence, good people are teachers of bad people, while bad people are the charge of the good people. Not to revere one's teachers, not to cherish one's charge, is to be on the wrong road, however intelligent one might be. This is an essential tenet of the Tao. It's an ancient Chinese saying that often was said in the Zen tradition, what comes through the gate is not family treasure. And this whole idea that if something's family treasure, it's been in the house for generations. It's not something that enters, you know. And to really look at your own self that way, like anything that comes in from the outside is not the treasure of who you are at your core. It might mirror that, but it's not the treasure of who you are in your core does not come from outside. Ali ibn al-Talib, the great Sufi, said, "He who has 1,000 friends has not one friend to spare, and he who has one enemy will meet him everywhere." St. Ignatius of Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, said, "Our only desire and one choice should be this: I want and I choose what better leads to God's deepening life in me." You know, and for those who are not comfortable with the God language, you know, I choose what is best for my highest self. Goethe, the polymath, said quite simply, "As soon as you trust yourself, you will know how to live." So simple and so profound. Joseph Campbell said, "It is by going down into the abyss that we recover the treasures of life. When you stumble, there lies your treasure. The very cave that you are afraid to enter turns out to be the source of what you are looking for. The damn thing in the cave was so dreadful has become the center. You find the jewel and it draws you off. In loving the spiritual, you cannot despise the earthly. The purpose of the journey is compassion. When you have come past the pairs of opposites, you have reached compassion. The goal is to bring the jewel back to the world, to join the two things together." Satchananda Saraswati said, "A happy or unhappy life is your own creation. No one else is responsible. If you remember this, you won't find fault with anybody. You are your own best friend as well as your worst enemy." Very honest. The Dalai Lama said, "I'm trying to promote the value of compassion, and not just based on attachment to those who are close, but rather for all beings, irrespective of what that person does to you or whether they are your enemy or not." So again, that universal compassion. The teacher Choyang Trungpa said, "Real fearlessness is the product of tenderness. It comes from letting the world tickle your heart, your raw and beautiful heart. You're willing to open up without resistance or shyness and face the world. You're willing to share your heart with others." And that's a very powerful place to be. But again, the only way you can hold that tremendous heart openness is if you have good boundaries. Robert Thurman said, "The last thing most of us want to hear is that we might have any responsibility for creating our own enemies. But if we were ever to get rid of our enemies, or at least render them powerless over us, we'll have to own up to our part in creating the enmity." The Hugging Saint Amma says, "Learn to be thankful to everyone, to the entire creation, even to your enemy, and also to those who insult, because they all help you to grow." Tara Brock said, "We can decide to love life. We can consciously intend to love without holding back. Although we will continue to shut down, we can always start with exactly what is present and bring kindness to our resistance. We can say yes to our no. And as we intentionally deepen our yes, we discover an unconditional acceptance, an open, allowing acceptance that frees us. We are not dependent on life being a certain way. The openness of our presence itself gives rise to deep contentment." Tony Robbins says quite simply, "You get what you tolerate." It's kind of one of those uncomfortably honest statements.
That's the very opposite of the previous quote.
In some ways, yeah. All your life is your path to awakening. By resisting or not dealing with its challenges, you stay asleep to reality. Pay attention to what your life is trying to reveal to you. Say yes to its fierce, ruthless, and loving grace. That's Adi Ashanti. Brené Brown says, "Compassionate people ask what they need. When they say no when they need to, and when they say yes, they mean it. They're compassionate because their boundaries keep them out of resentment." It's always a really good... Resentment and being offended, all those things are usually really good indications that I haven't been keeping good boundaries. Sharon Alder says, "The only real conflict you will ever have in your life won't be with others, but with yourself." Terry Cole says being accommodating can be nice. Auto-accommodating is just exhausting. Chris Yami said, friends ask you questions. Enemies question you. Cheryl Richardson says, if you want to live an authentic, meaningful life, you need to master the art of disappointing and upsetting others, hurting feelings, and living with the reality that some people just won't like you. It may not be easy, but it's essential if you want your life to reflect your deepest desires, values, and needs. And finally, Thuan Mare says, a warrior cuts out all unnecessary acts. In this way, he saves his personal power.